You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, there's a lot going on in national politics this week, and a special from the NPR Politics podcast team is going to help break it down, from the Senate confirmation hearings to President Obama's farewell address. That's coming up tonight at 7 on the Ideas Network.
Now, President Obama said goodbye to the country last night as his term as president comes to a close and President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take office. The speech was an emotional one, especially when he addressed his family, but Obama didn't shy away from pressing policy issues that are being debated on Capitol Hill right now.
The speech also had warnings as the president talked about the state of democracy, what threatens it, and what he thinks will preserve it. Barbara Perry joins us now. She's a professor of ethics and institutions and director of presidential studies at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. Barbara, welcome back.
Pleasure to be with you as always, Veronica.
Well, Barbara, overall, what did you think of last night's farewell speech?
I thought it will go down in history as classic Obama, and I mean that in the best sense, that he's known, of course, as a great orator, came on the scene as such, and will depart the public scene and his official scene as such. And I think this will go down in history along with Washington's farewell and Reagan's farewell, to tell us not only what they accomplished, but the things that we have to think about as we go forward in our country at the founding period for Washington during the Cold War and Reagan's case, and during a time of great uncertainty in our country and in the world right now.
Is there anything that struck you as unusual about how the president chose to use the time that he had there to talk last night?
It was unusual in the very setting that he chose to give it. As most people probably know and can remember from the most recent farewell addresses, they've been pretty sedate affairs from the Oval Office, which give it that certain heft to come from the Oval Office, but it's also very staid. So to have a rousing 20,000 people in a big arena, again, really tied us back to Obama's coming on the scene and on the stage, the national stage and then the world stage, first in 2004 and then in 2007, 2008. So that in of itself, I think, made it different from more recent addresses of this type. And I think because we're in unusual times, and particularly in the aftermath of the Trump election in November, I thought the very moment that the president started to speak and used the term lame duck to say, in a joking way, I'm a lame duck, and he had been saying to people, please sit down, please now quiet, and no one did, and he says, I'm a lame duck, no one's following me. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a little bit of a shot across the bow, perhaps, of the Mitch McConnells of the world, who tried to paint him as a lame duck 11 months ago when Justice Scalia passed away, and therefore the Senate didn't take up the confirmation hearings of Merrick Garland. And then the second line, the president stated, not unusual for a president, but to say, my fellow Americans, and I noted that he ended the speech as he went into his conclusion with that. And I thought that might have been just a bit of a poke in the eye of Mr. Trump to say, not only am I American, but I am addressing my fellow Americans here at the end.
Now, there's an ongoing battle on the Hill right now over Obama's signature piece of legislation, the Affordable Care Act, and he talked about that last night in his speech. Here's a bit of what he had to say.
Health care costs are rising at the slowest rate in 50 years. And I've said, and I mean it, if anyone can put together a plan that is demonstrably better than the improvements we've made to our healthcare system that covers as many people at less cost, I will publicly support it.
And what do you make of that particular piece of his speech last night, saying that if someone comes up with something better, he'll support it? Does that sound like a challenge to you?
It does, and I had also watched the president's interview with two correspondents from Vox, the online news organization that the president did with them on Friday afternoon at Blair House across from the White House, with a small audience of people around the country who had been a part of Obamacare in some states, signing people up for so-called Obamacare. And he said the same thing, and I was struck by it on Friday, and I guess he either had that thought or his speechwriters helped him to have that thought, and so he talked about it on Friday, and then he talked about it in his farewell speech. And I think it is a challenge to the opposite party now in the majority, certainly in the Senate and the House, and now in control of the White House, to say, I understand you're going to try to repeal this. You now have the numbers to do so, but I'm waiting for the second R. I'm waiting for replacement to follow repeal. Do you really mean that you're going to replace it? I hope so, because we don't want to leave those 20 million people behind who are now covered under the Affordable Care Act who might not be if it's repealed. And the president reiterated again last night, I will be the first to step forward and to support that replacement program if it covers those people and it does so more efficiently and more cheaply.
We're talking with Barbara Perry right now from the University of Virginia's Miller Center, talking about President Barack Obama's farewell address out of Chicago last night. And you've mentioned a couple times during the night where he seemed to take a bit of a jibe at somebody else there, to take a little bit of a dig at the next incoming administration, a change of parties there. And I wonder if you think that's unusual. On the other hand, you know, he did talk about the peaceful transition of power.
I thought he did it gracefully, as Obama is known to do. And so in fact, when people booed when he mentioned President-elect Trump, he cautioned them not to do that and said that the American people should support the peaceful transfer of power in this country from one president to the next. And I believe that that is what he means. But I just thought maybe I'm reading too much into it. And again, it's not unusual for a president to say my fellow Americans. But I just took a bit of the irony from his saying that, given that the very person who's going to replace him on January 20th is someone who doubted his very American citizenship.
Now, Obama also said that the idea of a world that had moved into a post-race period was never accurate, and that was something that was talked about shortly after his election the first time. But he said last night that that was never accurate, and it was time to broaden the idea of diversity. And here's what he had to say.
For blacks and other minority groups, that means tying our own very real struggles for justice to the challenges that a lot of people in this country face. Not only the refugee or the immigrant or the rural poor or the transgender American, but also the middle-aged white guy who, from the outside, may seem like he's got advantages, but has seen his world upended by economic and cultural and technological change.
Barbara, what's your take on that little bit of the speech that we just heard there, in particular the reference to the middle-aged white guy?
I thought that the president was speaking to the left and to the right side of the spectrums on that, and to state a truism, that the concept of post-racial America may never happen because race is so embedded in our history and our consciousness, not that we shouldn't strive for that. But it would be a bit like saying that we had come to the end of history when the Cold War ended. I never understood that when some historians themselves would say that. So I think he stated a truism. But I think that reference to the middle-aged white guy, and I thought that was an interesting choice of words. It was a bit slangy, if you will, a bit informal to refer to the white guy. But I'm wondering if before November the 8th that line would have been in this message, this farewell address. But I say it's to the left and to the right because we know that both Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders were appealing to some middle-aged white guys who have seen, as the president said, their worlds upended by globalism and the changes going on in our country and in the world.
Barbara Perry is with us right now. She's the director of presidential studies at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. And we're recapping some of the highlights of President Obama's farewell address in Chicago last night.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you thought of President Obama's farewell address. Did anything surprise you or stand out to you? What do you think about what he said about issues like health care, like race and diversity, like the transfer of power and his warnings of possible threats to the future of democracy, of representative government. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation with Barbara Perry, Director of Presidential Studies at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. And we're talking about President Obama's farewell address in Chicago last night as President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take office.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch or listen to the farewell speech? What did you think? What did you think about the tone and the message? Are there any issues that you wish he had talked about that he didn't? And what do you think of President Obama's accomplishments, his legacy in his presidency, and his warning as he left about threats to democracy, to representative government in America and around the world? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Barbara, there were some clear references last night to legislation out of the states that could wind up before the Supreme Court. Things voting laws, redistricting, that's an issue at play in Wisconsin. And the president said, when voting rates in America are some of the lowest among advanced democracies, we should make it easier, not harder, to vote. And he went on to say, when Congress is dysfunctional, we should draw our congressional districts to encourage politicians to cater to common sense and not rigid extremes. Who do you think that section of the speech was intended for?
I think it was intended for the broad audience. First of all, to opponents of the president and opponents of the Democratic Party and those who might be opponents of certain voting blocs in this country, particularly minorities. Because certainly some people on the left and in the Democratic Party and among a liberal persuasion believe that the seeds of the Donald Trump victory and the Republican sweep this past November were sowed in state legislatures that began to move towards what some would call voter suppression in a more neutral way, something like voter ID laws, for example. Or closing down voting places and causing long lines to form and that sort of thing. And voting redistricting has always been a controversial point between parties as long as we've had parties going back to the founding. And just after George Washington and nonpartisan left office, we ended up with our two parties. So redistricting has always been a controversy. It's ended up before the Supreme Court before, often in reference in the 60s, 40s, 50s, and 60s to race, and it continues to do that. So I think it was his staking his ground. I'm sure this is something that as a citizen now, come January 20th, as he returns to the private citizenry, he will work on these issues. And I think it also then linked to his conclusion about being involved and being an active citizen and getting out and voting. And even, as he said, pick up a tablet, pick up a clipboard and get out there if you don't like what's happening and run for office yourself.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Terry joining us from Green Bay. Terry, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to share?
I wanted to say that I thought Obama's farewell speech was encouraging. And also, I only recently kind of started getting involved with politics and stuff like that after Trump's election here. And I don't think we're going to see the end of President Obama. I find it encouraging that he's still going to be moving forward and being involved in issues. And I think he's still that very important rallying cry that a lot of liberals and progressives and Democrats will need moving forward when it comes to organizing and continuing, to fight for issues that affect everybody.
Terry, thanks a lot for that call. And Barbara, I want to ask you about that. Toward the end of the speech, you were getting at it at some of those comments just a moment ago about lacing up the shoes, picking up a clipboard, running for office, getting involved. And Obama said that he would be there, too, as a citizen. He used that word. Does that mean that you expect him to be more involved in politics maybe than other former presidents? Or what do you make out of that remark?
I think he is going to be more involved than even he thought and realized before November 8th. I think he probably thought that Secretary Clinton would win and that she would carry on his legacy at least for the next 4 years and that he could go back to doing what he was particularly interested in before he became president, and that is something he did mention again last night, was community organizing. And this very week last year at this time, my colleagues and I from the Miller Center met with some of the leaders of the Obama Foundation, the Library Foundation in Chicago, those who are putting together his presidential library and the museum and the center that will go with it. So like most modern presidents, particularly since Jimmy Carter onward, they want to have a role. Some choose to go a bit underground, as George W. Bush did, but George W. Bush left with a low approval rating. Obama comes out of the White House with a high approval rating and will want to, I think, not only stay involved now in community service and pushing that agenda, but I think now he realizes with the Trump election that he will probably be more involved in trying to maintain his legacy for the near and distant future.
Thank you for that call, and we'll go next to Wallace in Weyerhaeuser. Wallace, hi.
After listening to this man's speech, you have to admit, what a statesmanship. He didn't demonize anybody, and what this man had to go through with the most obstructionist Congress and all the likes of Rush Limbaugh and all of these people who were demonizing him, how he handled it with so much statesmanship, I believe that his legacy is going to be very, very strong and all on the plus side. Thank you.
Wallace, thank you for that call. And Wallace, not worried about President Obama's legacy, what do you think he's looking at in terms of trying to stop Republicans from doing things they wanted to do for a long time, like rolling back the Affordable Care Act? Do you think that legacy is in jeopardy?
I think we'll look at legacy in two ways, and one is legislation, as you're suggesting, with the Affordable Care Act, and if the Republicans make good on their promise, which they have every right to make in the campaign, and now that they're, again, if they have the majority on the Capitol Hill in Congress, and they have a one-party supporter down in the White House, they have that opportunity. Even so, I think that this talk of replacement, I've listened to a little bit of President-elect Trump's press conference today. He talked about replacement. The very fact that we're talking about replacing the Affordable Care Act with something else to cover these 20 million people who had not been covered prior to ACA, that in of itself is a legacy, because let's face it, those 20 to 30 million people had not been covered, and when the Clintons tried to do this in the 90s, it didn't work, and those people were still uncovered two decades later. So I think that will, even if the so-called Obamacare goes away, but if it's replaced with something else, the very fact that there has to be a replacement is a movement forward. And then the next part of legacy is to Wallace's point, which is statesmanship. I would add the adjectives to President Obama of grace and dignity. No scandals to speak of in his administration over 8 years' time. I think that he'll go down in history for those positive aspects. And I think, as most presidents, even Bush 43 rose in popularity and approval as time marched on, I think we will see that with President Reagan, particularly in contrast to the lack of some of those adjectives that will probably not be used to describe Donald Trump.
And Barbara, I want to ask you about something you said a little bit ago. You said that you thought President Obama would be more involved than he thought he was going to be in the next 4 to 8 years, trying to preserve his legacy, being active. What might that look like? How would a former president be involved? What kind of role would he have?
Right. I see it as one that will probably be out of the shadows. And to some extent, Bush 43 has done this model where he said, I'm not going to comment on what the next president is doing. And he's pretty much stuck to that. He's gone back to Texas, but through his foundation in Dallas, where I also just visited recently, and his library and his center, he takes on those roles that he feels comfortable with and those issues that he is fighting for. And I think President Obama thought he would perhaps follow that model and wouldn't need to be criticizing the next president he thought would be Hillary Clinton. So I think that he's going to be more active, would be my sense, that he will be out on the speaking circuit, the more public speaking circuit, perhaps university settings, on talk shows, as he was wont to do as president, and using his library and his foundation and his center in Chicago as a jumping off point, along with writing. certainly he'll be doing memoirs, as presidents now do. On top of that, I suspect he'll be writing advocacy pieces, op-eds, articles, because, let's face it, he is a great wordsmith, and he is a professor by trade.
And as you said, Barbara, President Obama leaving office with high approval ratings and at a much younger age than most presidents. I mean, what do you think? You outlined the role that he may have. What do you think Americans would like to see at this point? Do we know?
Well, there will be those who would like him to fade from the scene, never to be seen again, if they opposed him at the time he was elected or came to oppose him. But he leaves office with an approval rating in the 55 to 57 range, depending on the poll one is looking at, and compared to President George W. Bush leaving with approvals at about 36%, Obama comes out more in the Bill Clinton, Dwight Eisenhower, Ronald Reagan category. So I think Americans who continue to support him, and you saw 20,000 of them gathered around last night, I'm sure there are many other in the millions who do, and I think that they will take great comfort from seeing him on the public scene because of his statesmanship and grace and dignity and intellect.
Barbara, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Veronica. I always enjoy it. Thank you for asking me.
That was Barbara Perry. She's a professor of ethics and institutions, and she's also director of presidential studies at the University of Virginia's Miller Center. And she joined us to talk about President Obama's final address to the nation in Chicago last night. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.